Nuclear radioactive wastewater. The millions of tons of water used to cool nuclear reactors end up being contaminated by radioactive chemicals and can't be safely released into the environment because of the damage these chemicals can cause to people and the world within which we live. But that's not stopping decommissioning company Holtec from forging ahead with plans to dump radioactive tritium-contaminated water from 2 reactor sites in highly populated areas in the United States into adjacent bodies of water, water that's used for drinking, commercial fishing, recreation, and much more. Fight back, you might think. And you'd be right. That is exactly what concerned citizens in Massachusetts and New York have been doing for years. But to what effect? It takes a veteran activist and local resident to tell us.
We feel that not only is Holtec damaging our economy, public health and safety, and our environment, but they're damaging our democracy because all the towns on Cape Cod voted no dumping radioactive water into our bay. That's over 20 towns in Martha's Vineyard, Scituate, Duxbury, Plymouth, Board of Health. The populace has said no dumping. Senator Markey, Senator Warren, Representative Keating, no dumping in the bay. All of our elected officials on Cape Cod. Our governor has said no dumping in the bay. And yet Holtec is posed to dump if they're not already dumping now. And nothing has stopped them.
Well, when you hear it that honestly and bluntly from Diane Turco, who has spent decades fighting issues regarding the now-shuttered Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant on Cape Cod Bay in Massachusetts, you get a real understanding of the arrogance of nuclear decommissioning company Holtec, which is refusing to follow the democratic process, and how that leads the rest of us smack up against the dangers of that seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, it's water, water everywhere. But will any of it be safe to drink once the nuclear industry gets done with it? Millions of tons of radioactive tritium-contaminated water are intended to be dumped into Cape Cod Bay and the Hudson River from 2 separate nuclear reactor sites. To find out the details and how the various groups fighting this issue in different locations are working together, we spoke with 2 fierce veteran activists. Diane Turco is director of Cape Downwinders on Cape Cod, and she fills us in about the Pilgrim Nuclear Station, and Mona Jo Green, who is Hudson River Sloop Clearwater's Environmental Action Director, and she tells us about the exact same issues at Indian Point's 3 defunct reactors, located only 36 miles from Midtown Manhattan. We will also have nuclear news from around the world. Linda Pence Gunter with the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story, Numbnuts of the Week for Outstanding Nuclear Boneheadedness, and more honest nuclear information than can fit between all the lies told by Fox fake news about the 2020 election. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, February 28, 2023, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. In New York State, lawmakers have proposed a bill to ban the release of radioactive water into waterways. The proposal was introduced in response to an announcement by Holtec that it would seek to release radioactive wastewater from the decommissioned Indian Point nuclear power plant into the Hudson River. Much more about that on this week's featured interview. We will link to a seminar where genuine experts explain how radioactive tritium in water impacts health and safety. A fire last week at the Y-12 National Security Complex in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, involved uranium, but it has been put down and there are no reports of injuries or release of radiation. Y-12 manufactures parts for America's nuclear weapons, stores nuclear materials, and provides enriched uranium to the U.S. Navy. And while California was pummeled with a blizzard for several days last week, wave height outside the San Onofre nuclear reactor in Southern California remained at about 5 feet. Canisters of radioactive fuel from the defunct reactor are stored 100 feet from the mean high tide, so storms are always a concern, and the possibility exists for the seawall to be breached. At this time, it was not. Japan is hosting the G7 summit in Hiroshima in May and is seeking the support of that group and is pressing for inclusion of language in the welcoming address that includes a welcome to the transparent, you can put that in quotes, process for the release of treated water from TEPCO's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant and welcomes the progress of a plan to reuse decontaminated soil. Japan has reduced the types of radionuclides under monitoring from 64 to 30, so 34 radionuclides won't even be tested for. But attempts to force a test of the, quote, decontaminated, really contaminated, just removed from its original location, soil from Fukushima Daiichi, which were set to start at the end of March in Tokyo and neighboring Saitama Prefecture, has been postponed because residents complained and raised concerns at briefing sessions in December. And now,
Nuclear Hot Seat. Nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, numbnuts of the week.
Hey, boys and girls, want to know something unique to do for your vacation this year? Japan Wonder Travel has got the answer. Take a tour of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. It's a 2-day tour, round trip Tokyo to Fukushima and back, that will allow you to, as one tourist agent said, enjoy Japan one step deeper. And the brochure states, joining this tour will have a big impact on your life. Or perhaps your lifespan? Visitors can access 96% of the grounds without the need of hazmat suits. Talk with a carefully vetted population of local people who experienced the disaster and get an understanding of how they've been dealing with the aftermath and trying to rebuild their communities. There's going to be lots more on that next week on Voices from Japan, our special on the Fukushima 12th anniversary. Acceptable attire are long sleeve tops, long pants, socks to cover your ankles, and a lead bodysuit to shield you from radiation, along with a respirator. Sandals and high-heeled shoes are prohibited. And all of this is why Japan Wonder Service, it's no wonder that you're this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, numbnuts of the week.
Internationally, the big news is Russian President Vladimir Putin's announcement that Russia will suspend the New START treaty and is ready to resume nuclear testing. Here with more on it is Linda Pence Gunter with this week's Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story.
A lot of attention was paid last week to Russian President Vladimir Putin's announcement that he was suspending Russia's participation in the New START treaty. The treaty, which was signed by the then presidents of the US and Russia, Barack Obama and Andrei Medvedev, in 2010, limits the respective countries' nuclear weapons arsenals to around 3,000 each. The treaty was renewed in 2021 for another 5 years. Putin's announcement provoked considerable condemnation, but is it really that significant? Yes and no. Two enemies talking, especially seated at the same negotiating table, is always better than silence. And having the US and Russia engage together in any kind of treaty that ostensibly signals an interest in Armageddon avoidance is a good thing. But the New START treaty is not about disarmament. It's more of a freeze. It's a treaty that, as IPPNW's Ira Helfen put it so chillingly on Democracy Now!, quote, allows both the United States and Russia to maintain arsenals which are capable of destroying modern civilization 6 times over. 3,000 weapons are too many.
So is one, given the horrors we have already seen a single atomic bomb inflict. And today's weapons are far larger than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. So if zero nuclear weapons is the only acceptable number for those of us who don't buy into the myth of deterrence and genuinely want a nuclear-free world, then New START might be a start, but it's by no means a solution. Putin's New START announcement came during what was effectively his equivalent of the US president's State of the Union address. It was quickly weeded out by the headline makers as the news of the day, tempting though it must have been to focus instead on the sections that seem to have been written by Trump acolytes, his sanctimonious pseudo-religiosity, allegations that the West sanctions pedophilia, and his rampant homophobia. But violating treaties, or breaking them altogether, is hardly the exclusive domain of Putin's Russia. The US has a sterling record on this front. And while we accuse Russia of its illegal invasion of a sovereign nation, the US owns the lion's share of these. Just read Stephen Kinzer's brilliant book Overthrow for chapter after shocking chapter on this. None of this justifies Russia's war against Ukraine, nor walking away from treaties that, at least in intent, are supposed to make the world safer, or perhaps we should say a little less dangerous. But do they really work, these half measures that involve weapons caps rather than abolition, and that require inspections and verifications that often don't happen? There is only one treaty that can address this, and it's the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which does just that, makes nuclear weapons illegal, and those who continue to harbor them abhorrent outlaws. Of course, Putin's posturing may have been just that, another not-so-veiled threat that if the US and NATO continue to arm and finance Ukraine, then Russia will begin building up its nuclear arsenal again, and possibly even use it. Hopefully, these are empty threats. Nuclear weapons cost obscene amounts of money, the kind of money even Putin likely can't get his hands on now in the midst of an expensive war. And walking away from the treaty would also allow the US to increase its arsenal, something it appears to be doing anyway under the guise of refurbishment and updating, and something that certainly doesn't serve Russia's interests. The nuclear football should never be used as a political football. It should never be used at all. I'm Linda Pence-Gunter, reporting for Nuclear Hot Seat, and that's this week's hot story.
In Canada, the government has launched a program to support the commercial development of small modular nuclear reactors, providing $29.6 million Canadian dollars, the equivalent of $21.8 million US dollars, for funding over 4 years to develop supply chains for the manufacture, fuel supply, and security, and to fund research on safe small modular nuclear reactor waste management solutions. Good luck with that. Now, here's the first of this week's two featured interviews. Big nuclear decommissioning companies are planning to release radioactive tritium-contaminated water into adjacent major bodies of water. We usually think of this in connection with Japan, where they plan to discharge 1.3 million tons of the radioactive water over the objection of Japanese citizens, the fishing industry, the countries of China, South Korea, and Pacific Islanders. Outrageous. But if one lives in the United States, there is a similar threat, actually two of them, much closer to home. And that's what we're looking at this week. At both the site of the defunct Pilgrim nuclear reactor in Massachusetts and Indian Point's three reactors in New York, decommissioning company Holtec is moving forward with its intentions to release tritiated water, as it's called, from those sites. That's water that has been contaminated with radioactive tritium. Today, we talk with activists directly involved in the fight to stop that from happening. First, Pilgrim in Massachusetts. Diane Turco is director of the Cape Downwinders on Cape Cod, a group that's been fighting issues at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Reactor for more than 40 years. With decommissioning company Holtec barreling ahead on its decision to release radioactive water from Pilgrim spent fuel pools directly into Cape Cod Bay, possibly as soon as this summer, there's been tremendous outcry against it. We last spoke with Diane Turco about Pilgrim problems for Nuclear Hot Seat number 550 on January 4th, 2022. In the more than year that has passed since then, much more has come to the fore for our attention and our alarm. I spoke with Diane Turco this time on Saturday, February 18, 2023. Diane Turco, always great to have you with us here on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Well, nice to be here.
Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant shut down on May 31st of 2019, but it left behind quite a legacy. How much radioactive water, tritium-contaminated radioactive water, is still on site?
Currently at the site, there's 1.1 million gallons of radioactive water at the Pilgrim site. And Holtec is planning to discharge or dump that water into our beautiful ocean sanctuary that is Cape Cod Bay.
What are the known dangers of releasing this radioactive water into the bay, to people, to the wildlife, to the ocean itself?
Well, as I understand, I'm not a scientist, but I read and I listen to some good people, and the tritium that is in the water cannot be removed, and it will end up in our waterways. It will end up on our beaches as salt spray. It can also become organically bound into the sediments, into the grasses, up the food chain, onto our plates. And I'll tell you, Cape Cod Bay is a beautiful area. There's Duxbury oysters, there's Wellfleet oysters. People fish, swim. It's just part of our blue economy. This whole area is based on the beauty of Cape Cod Bay. And Holtec's planning to contaminate it with this radioactive water. They have other options. They have clearly other options. But dumping into our bay is illegal, according to Massachusetts laws. When Holtec purchased Pilgrim, the Attorney General and Holtec signed an agreement, and Holtec agreed to abide by all state laws and regulations. And one of them is Chapter 21E, specifically mentioned in that agreement, and that is the Massachusetts Oil and Hazardous Materials Release and Prevention Act. And in that act, they identify hazardous materials, materials that have radioactive components in it. And so that's this water. But Holtec is dismissing all of this, as they do wherever they go. Holtec does what they want because it's all about the Benjamin.
I've already spoken with Manajo Green of River Keepers, who are dealing with Indian Point. And It's the exact same issue that's coming up. And of course, the precedent on all of this is what Japan is planning to do at Fukushima, which is to release the radioactive water there. So this seems to now be part of the playbook of the nuclear industry, if they can get away with it. So What kind of pushback is going on in Massachusetts against Holtec's not asking for permission, but stating their intentions and ignoring the objections?
Environmental Protection Agency sent a letter to Holtec in January last year saying it is prohibited for you to discharge any spent fuel pool water. And Holtec for a whole year said, no, it isn't. We don't agree with your rules. EPA said, yes, it is. You can't dump your water. Back and forth, all the way to December of this year, where EPA finally said, if you dump the water, there will be a fine and jail time, possible jail time. But we know Holtec already knew all that. So Holtec has been dismissing the EPA claims. Now they say they will comply with EPA. But again, we don't know what that means. Compliance to Holtec is in another universe compared to where we are. Dr. Chris Singh, the CEO of Holtec, said at Senator Markey's special hearing he had in May in Plymouth about the water dumping, he said, we won't dump contaminated anything. But on the other hand, we say the water is not contaminated by definition. So they play with words. What does it mean to comply to them is different from what it means to us.
You spoke about the hearing that took place last May. What kind of official governmental Massachusetts-based pushback has there been from politicians and other officials?
We did have a state senator, Sue Moran, filed a bill for a study, a commission to look at the environmental and economic impacts of the dumping into Cape Cod Bay. It would damage our blue economy here. It passed in the House and Senate as part of an economic development bill, but our governor, Charlie Baker, line item vetoed it out of the bill. Yes. Yep.
You're responding to the look on my face.
Yes. 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 It's like, we were shocked too. I mean, they said it, you know, it passed as a bundle in the state house, both Senate and House. And then he line item vetoed it. What we understand is the Holtec lobbyist is a friend of his. Anyways, we are asking our governor to hold Holtec accountable and comply with Massachusetts regulations and laws and immediately remove dumping from their radioactive waste management plan because it's illegal in the state of Massachusetts. Our Ocean Sanctuaries Act prohibits dumping industrial waste into our bay. She has come out and said they can't dump, but we haven't seen the state step up yet to do anything concrete. We are also asking our Attorney General to also immediately enforce the state laws and regulations and prohibit the dumping. We haven't seen that yet either. So Save Our Bay MA, which is part of the coalition I'm working with now, is going to be sending a letter asking them to do so. And we're asking for a meeting too, to move along on this.
It just makes me so mad that these companies, anything to do with nuclear, think that they are above the law.
Yes. Well, you know what? Because they've been getting away with it for a long time, and it's got to stop now. And so here in Massachusetts, we're hoping that, no, we plan that Holtec will be held accountable and removing dumping wastewater into our bay, radioactive wastewater into our bay. Now, you know, the International Atomic Energy Agency, not actually a friend of anti-nuclear folks and protecting our planet.
They actually have in their charter that they must promote nuclear. So that's why they downplay the numbers and downplay the danger in Ukraine. And they're not our friend. We cannot rely on them to say things that will be protective of the population as opposed to protective of the industry.
Right. But guess what? If you look up how they recommend treatment of tritiated water, they say that tritiated water should be contained in leak-proof containers and kept from waterways. I mean, if the IAEA says that, that's pretty good. So what we're saying is, you know, Holtec, be responsible and do the right thing. You can't dump it into our bay. There are other things you can do that are legal, too. None of them are good. One of them, trucking them to another community. I mean, we can't do that. It's not right. The other thing is evaporating it. Well, the tritium goes into the atmosphere, comes down on the population and the environment anyways. Perhaps storing it somehow, keeping it in the pool, whatever. But if they had to do that for like 60 years until the radionuclides decay, then that's what we should do. That seems like the most reasonable at this point right now. The most reasonable thing to do is just to hold on to it. But that cuts into Holtec's profit, because they're going to be walking away from this site with about $1 billion in profit. They're making about $500 million in the money they get back from DOE for storing the waste there. And then another $500 million from the decommissioning trust fund, which, you know, is ratepayer money here. It's not industry profit, or no industry money was put into the decommissioning trust fund. That was all from ratepayers up until 1999 before deregulation. So it's really our money. And so we should have a say in how this is being used. So environmentally responsible, not about profit.
When you talk about the coalition that is fighting back against this, what are some of the groups that are involved in that, and how do they represent the concerned citizens?
Right. Well, we have like the United American Indians, the Sierra Club, the League of Women Voters, Pilgrim Watch, Cape Town Winders. We have the realtors are huge here. The fishermen. Now, we do have this new group, Ryan Collins from My Fishing Cape Cod, and he started a petition asking CEO Chris Singh to remove dumping into the water from the plan by March 27th, the next Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel meeting in Plymouth. It has 10,000 signatures in 2.5 weeks.
Have you been in touch with Manajo Green, Riverkeeper, the people who are fighting at Indian Point? And have you also been in touch with Fukushima, the groups there, regarding the water release?
Right. We've been working closely with Manajo. I just recently spoke on a Zoom program they had with Dr. Helen Caldicott and Eric Epstein about what the issues are surrounding this wastewater dumping. So it's awesome that we're all working together, because we are all in this together. And we're hoping that here in Plymouth, if we can stop Holtec here and force this company to do the right thing, then it could set a precedent at all the other nuclear reactor sites that will be decommissioning. Unfortunately, we know, like at Oyster Creek, Holtec dumped radioactive water while they were putting the oyster beds in place, Burnicutt Bay.
And this is in New Jersey?
In New Jersey, yes, yes. Janet Truro informed me of that, and it was in the newspaper article. They didn't alert anyone. And so that's why we are concerned, too, that they may be dumping here and not telling us. Because, as I said, Chris Singh said, by definition, the water is not contaminated. And so if you go by that, it's pretty scary. So we need our state to step up immediately. So we're hoping that we get an appointment with the governor and the AGO to work on this.
You know, I'm reminded of the gay movement when AIDS was happening and it was not getting the attention from the government that it needed. And a group formed called ACT UP, which was pretty dramatic. They were not afraid to be arrested. They were not afraid to be disruptive. And actually, that was probably the pivotal group in getting the kind of attention paid to the issue that needed. And I'm wondering if it's possible, if there will ever be an ACT UP group dealing with nuclear to be able to do the kinds of things that the current movement, with our good manners in place and our trust in the system, eroded though it might be, might be able to start upping the pressure on Holtec and the other companies, like in Japan, TEPCO, to do the right thing, because they're obviously not going to do it by themselves. They have no conscience, so we can't step on that pedal.
Right. Good point. Well, you know, we're just seeing that the broader coalition of folks, and it's nice that some younger folks are starting to get involved, like Ryan and the whole fishing group, and there's some high school kids starting to get involved, and we're hoping that we move in that direction. We've been discussing some things that we could be a little bit creative about. The last action I did was with NPR reporters at the Pilgrim site when I walked on to the site to point out that you could eyeball the dry casks and stand there for half an hour and no security comes out. No one comes out. And 3 years later, when I went to trial with Dr. Caldicott as a witness and Dr. Ed Lyman and all those good people, it was dismissed within 10 minutes because the police didn't show up and the judge was more than willing to say, okay, we're done with this. So it was a big setup. They dragged us for 3 years and we were dismissed in 10 minutes. It's important work to do because this is our community. We feel that not only is Holtec damaging our economy, public health and safety, and our environment, but they're damaging our democracy because all the towns on Cape Cod voted no dumping radioactive water into our bay. That's over 20 towns in Martha's Vineyard, Scituate, Duxbury, Plymouth, Board of Health. The populace has said no dumping. Senator Markey, Senator Warren, Representative Keating, no dumping in the bay. All of our elected officials on Cape Cod. Our governor has said no dumping in the bay. And yet Holtec is posed to dump if they're not already dumping now. And nothing has stopped them. So we're here trying to protect our commons. And so what do the people do?
That's my next question. Without giving away any private planning that is going on, what are the next steps and what can the listeners of Nuclear Hot Seat do to support you?
We are asking again for people to call the governor and say, would you please hold Holtec accountable to comply with the state laws and regulations? Again, the Ocean Sanctuaries Act, no waste dumping into our bay. And there's other Massachusetts, like the Endangered Species Act. We have the beautiful right whale in Cape Cod Bay. It's stunning, but they are an endangered species. And tritium not only impacts the DNA of humans, but it also impacts the DNA of animals. And so this would impact generations to come. It doesn't need to happen. It needs to stop. It's our decision. It's a human decision to not damage our environment. We need to hold these corporations accountable to our communities. But how is that happening? It's very hard because everyone's against this. And Holtec, if they dump, the fine, the EPA fine is cheaper than doing anything else. So you know what? They know what the fine is, and they're a big corporation. Nobody's going to jail at Holtec. So they'll take the hit. And that's criminal. And that's immoral.
If one is religious, one could also call it sinful, but I doubt that that's a term that they would relate to. Diane Turco, I'm sorry that the battle continues, and I am so glad that you are on our side and continue to be articulate, fierce, organized, and unstoppable. So here's hoping that your energy, combined with that of all the other concerned citizens who join in this battle, are successful in stopping Holtec from dumping the water, not only in Massachusetts, but also off Indian Point, into the Hudson River, in New York, and any place else that they're planning to do the nuclear evil that they do. for now. Thanks so much for taking time on a Sunday morning to talk with us here at Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you. And as Helen Caldicott said, my wonderful mentor, if you love this planet, let's all step up and stop Holtec.
From your mouth to somebody's ears.
That was Diane Turco. She is director of the Cape Downwinders on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. We will link to the group on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 610. We'll also link to the petition you can sign, Holtec, please don't dump radioactive water into Cape Cod Bay. We're so polite. By the way, Chris Singh, president of Holtec, said the water plan for release was not contaminated by definition. So here's what the dictionary has to say about that. Contaminated, made unfit for use by the introduction of unwholesome or undesirable elements. Tritium is neither wholesome nor desirable. Neither is Chris Singh. Someone should get him a dictionary. We'll have the second of this week's featured interviews in just a moment. But first, Native people the world over tell us water is life. You don't mess with the water. Yet here we are, facing tritium-contaminated radioactive water releases from nuclear reactors in Japan, Massachusetts, and New York. And those are just the big water dumps we know about. There are smaller releases and leaks into our shared water resources all the time that come from operating nuclear reactors. Basically, the nuclear power industry is messing with the resource necessary to the continuance of life on this planet. And even when the concerned citizens, governments, even countries demand responsibility and accountability, the nuclear industry shrugs their metaphoric shoulders and says, meh, it's not a problem, but just look at our bottom line and how it keeps growing. That's why Nuclear Hot Seat is here, to help you understand the violations of reason, accountability, and life force by the nuclear world and what you can do about it. We provide facts, continuity on stories, and context, as well as a healthy dose of skepticism, while encompassing a much deeper and nuanced telling of the facts than you could ever find on mainstream media. We cover not only what the industry is doing, but how brave activists around the world are fighting back, and how any one of us can take action towards stopping the nuclear madness that endangers us all. But to keep going, we need your help. Here's what you can do. Go to nuclearhotseat.com, click on the red donate button, and help with a donation of any amount. You can also set up a recurring donation for as little as $5 a month. Same as a cup of coffee and a nice tip here in the U.S. So if you value the work of Nuclear Hot Seat and the issues that we bring to your attention, please do what you can with a donation now. And know that however much you can help, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now to the second of this week's featured interviews. This one on New York and the Indian Point nuclear reactors, which are also being decommissioned by Holtec. We talk with Mana Jo Green. Since 2000, Mana Jo has been Hudson River Sloop Clearwater's Environmental Action Director, fighting on a variety of issues stemming from the Indian Point nuclear reactors located in Westchester County, New York, on the east bank of the Hudson River, only 36 miles north of Midtown Manhattan. Now, with all three reactors at Indian Point shut down, the fight is over what decommissioning company Holtec is planning to do with the tritium-contaminated wastewater from the facility. Having listened to the first interview, you probably have a pretty good idea of what their plans are. Note that when Mana Jo talks about a webinar, by the time you hear this, it will already have been held, but we will link to the recording on our website. I spoke with Mana Jo Green on Friday, February 17, 2023. Mana Jo Green, it's great to have you here with us on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you. Libby, it's great to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Fill us in. Indian Point shut down almost 2 years ago on April 30th of 2021. There's still a lot of radioactive water on site. How much are we talking about, and what is Holtec, the decommissioning company, planning on doing with it?
They are planning according to what they've told us so far, to release about 1 million gallons of treated but still radioactive water into the Hudson River, from which 7 communities take their drinking water. I just actually sent in a request to try to understand from which sources on site, but we do know that those fuel pools have stored highly radioactive fuel rods for more than 40 years. Some of the water over time has been changed, but that is the most radioactive water. And although they'll be treating it, the treatment system only removes the larger, heavier isotopes like strontium-90 and so forth. And it doesn't remove all of them. It reduces the amount that would be discharged, but it can't filter tritium, that is tritiated water, radioactive water, out of water. And it's that very radioactive water that if it gets into the aquatic ecosystem, or directly if somebody drinks it or they're swimming and, you know, get it, take it into their body, that water moves very easily into the cells and can affect the DNA. As a matter of fact, we are having a meeting on this very topic. If people want to find out more about it, they can go to grassroots environmental education, because we are recording it and it will be up there indefinitely. And also, if you have a hard time remembering, just write to manajo@clearwater.org and I'll send you the details.
We will, of course, have links up to all pertinent URLs and emails and the rest on our website. In terms of the tritiated water, we know that it poses a health danger because any radioactive material, once it gets out into the atmosphere, once it's in the body, it can do major damage. Yet Holtec seems to not only be planning on doing this and wanting to do this, they're acting like this is a done deal and they're just going to roll ahead and do it. How are they getting away with this?
We're hoping that in New York, they won't get away. We also hope that at Cape Cod, that and anywhere else they plan, our purpose is to stop it here now and set a precedent for the rest of the nation. Holtec has a pretty horrendous track record of bribery, lying to officials, ignoring the absolute unanimity in Massachusetts, where the attorney general, the elected officials, and community members have done everything they can, and they have legal mechanisms to stop it. And it looks like Holtec is just going to ignore that. And I think the bottom line is that, unfortunately, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is a captured agency. And if it's up to them to enforce, they won't. They'll grant waivers and exemptions and turn a blind eye. Both Holtec and the NRC have a long history of doing that. You know, I'm not just making this up. It's very real. It's a huge issue to put profit in front of public health and safety. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission repeatedly allows the industry to get away with that.
There was a meeting on February 2nd with the Indian Point Decommissioning Oversight Board and Holtec. And in reading a report of what went on there, I have to say my jaw dropped at the utter arrogance of the Holtec representative saying, well, this is the least worst option, as though that's actually something good. They have refused full transparency with the Department of Environmental Conservation. And they said that they were going to be dumping the water in August, but it might be sooner than that because, quote, we may be real efficient. Is this typical of what you face with Holtec? And Are they in a position where they can just roll over any governmental agency and do whatever it is they want, like a corporate fascist state?
We're going to try to seek an injunction. We've reached out to the Attorney General's office. We're trying to find legal help to issue an injunction so that they cannot move forward. You're right. It is absolute arrogance on their part. Their purpose is to get in and out as quickly as possible so they can keep the money in the decommissioning fund. They have a history of quick and dirty. It's very unfortunate that they are, with very little experience, decommissioning, I think it's 6 reactors or 6 plant sites. It's just whatever can make them the most money with no regard for public health and safety. And unfortunately, the way things are set up, the states do not have a lot of power or jurisdiction when it comes to nuclear. And even the Environmental Protection Agency, everyone defers to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission defers to the industry. We've got to get Congress to correct that before something really disastrous happens. We've seen what happened at Chernobyl and Fukushima and Three Mile Island. We don't want that to happen at an operating nuclear facility or at a decommissioned facility because of all that 40 years of nuclear waste is stored in dry cask storage on site. So we want to be sure that it's done as safely as possible, that there's a viable emergency planning process. And in the case of Indian Point, not only do they have radioactive water and radioactive fuel rods, but they also have large high-pressure power lines running under and adjacent to the facility. And not that long ago, there was actually a sinkhole that formed in Yorktown over one of these pipelines.
And to be clear, these are gas pipelines.
Yes. We're really playing Russian roulette. And the only way to stop this is to get Congress involved. So we will definitely be meeting. We're going to hold a congressional briefing. We're holding a whole series of forums to educate people. Everyone tends to let someone else worry about it. But if you live in that community, you worry about it. And we've been working with people from Peekskill and Cortland and Buchanan, the communities that are surrounding and hosting the facility, including their local schools, one of which is almost immediately adjacent to the facility.
Excuse me while I catch my breath. Two words that one never wants to hear in connection with anything nuclear is cheap and quick. You never want the decisions made on the basis of money, and you never want it to be made based on, oh, we can do this faster. It deserves to be long and slow because we're talking about an afterlife that goes on for, in the case of tritium, it's radioactive for, what, 120 years?
You're talking about all of the half-lives. The initial half-life, I believe, is 12 years.
Right. It's 12 years times 10 half-life cycles is that how one finds out how long something is radioactive. It's another way to diminish our awareness of what the danger is because it sounds like a much smaller number when actually the danger continues.
Yeah.
With the states not having jurisdiction and the need to turn to the EPA, which defers to the NRC, which defers to the nuclear industry, how can you interrupt this flow of glad-handing and backslapping on the part of the pro-nukesters to get some sanity into the process on behalf of people and the environment?
I think our most important tool is education. And that's what we're doing because everyone has a little bit of jurisdiction. And if people are educated, especially the agencies that have deferred. And I believe there is a legal mechanism For example, in New York State, we passed a law, the Green Amendment to the Constitution, that entitles us to clean air, clean water, and being free from pollution and harm. So we may be able to invoke that. We certainly have invoked it to prevent a fossil fuel plant on the Hudson, the Danskammer expansion. And, you know, it's inconsistent with the current law. And that I'm quite sure that after we get through all the legal appeals, that plant will not move forward. So I think there are legal mechanisms, but I'm not an attorney, and most of the grassroots activists I work with are not. So we're reaching out to see who can help in that regard. But I think what we need, I am afraid that Haltech is going to get quicker and dirtier so that they can do it before we can mount a legal case to stop them. But we're absolutely determined, and I think we will be successful. A lot rests on what happens at Indian Point and at Cape Cod.
So there actually is a chance that Haltech might ignore anything legal that is being mounted by Riverkeeper and other interested groups and just release the water and go, ah, too bad, it's done already.
I guess that is possible, but I do think that having a decommissioning oversight board that meets regularly and is open to public comment and is listening, I think there will be a way to stop it. That's if what they were doing in the past, the company would just give a report and they'd ask a few questions and be off. But this decommissioning oversight board is made of elected officials that are deeply engaged and well educated because of the forums and briefings that we've done and are asking hard questions. As a matter of fact, the supervisor for the town of Cortland himself is a physician. He cares very much about the health impacts. A very reasonable person, not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but he definitely hears our concerns. And also Senator Pete Harkin, who helped create the decommissioning oversight board. So the people that are on the DOB, as we call it affectionately, care and have the resources and are listening. So I'm hoping that we can get democracy to work and that protection of public health and safety will take priority. But we're going to need Congress's help because this isn't just Indian Point or Plymouth. It's the whole nearly 100 reactors across the country that are scheduled to be decommissioned over the next decade or so.
With the education that you are making available, how has the media been in terms of covering your concerns and getting the word out to the public?
The media has been good, but you know, we all know that we would like the media to be fair and present both sides. That's not always the case. But I will say that we've been getting very good coverage because these are serious issues that affect the local community, and they know that. I don't think the media has the same interest in protecting the industry that, for example, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission seems to be smitten by.
If listeners to Nuclear Hot Seat were able to assist you in any way, what would that be?
Here in the Hudson Valley, we've developed a municipal resolution. We're going to see if municipalities can quickly pass a resolution calling for the governor to find a way to prevent Haltech from discharging radioactive water into the Hudson or evaporating it into the air. They mentioned that that was an alternative. Then people are breathing it. If it goes into the river, they're either potentially drinking it or eating fish as it bioaccumulates up the food chain. This is a public health and safety issue of prime importance.
What can listeners do?
Well, the first thing is to review the two recordings that we've made so far of really top-notch information that is scientifically credible. And then the next thing is contact their own congressperson, because ultimately Congress is who still has jurisdiction over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And I believe NRDC has a bill pending, and it likely will be reintroduced this session. And that is to move the jurisdiction over radioactive isotopes to EPA and not leave it with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but also to create something akin to a decommissioning oversight board, a nuclear regulatory oversight board. There is an office of, I forget the title of it, that does do some oversight, but I think that needs to be strengthened because their regulations are not protective enough and they don't even follow their own regulations. And there's multiple examples of that.
We will link to the recordings that you mentioned because it is important that we educate ourselves about what tritium is, what it does, why this is dangerous, and why it should not be released into a body of water before being remediated completely.
Well, one thing is that municipal resolution can come from anywhere in the country. It's not just about Indian Point and the Hudson River. It's really about protecting our natural resources and particularly drinking water. And so that can be adapted to a given municipality and it can be sent directly to Congress. We'll take care of New York and New Jersey. But if listeners from across the country want to get involved and protect our resources from receiving radioactive discharges, we will make that municipal resolution and the fact sheets and the talking points widely available and start with the grassroots education site, and the Clearwater site, we'll link to them and we'll get the word out.
All links will be on Nuclear Hot Seat under this episode, number 610. And for now, Mana Jo Green, I want to thank you for making time available on such short notice to be my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Excellent. Thank you, Libby.
That was Mana Jo Green, Environmental Action Director of Hudson River Sloop Clearwater. We'll have a link to the videos and slides from the presentation on tritium and why Holtec releasing this radioactive water into our shared watershed is not a good idea. That will be on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 610. And while you're there, look for the yellow opt-in box. If you haven't already, sign up to get one email a week, which will have a link to that week's episode and a brief summary of some of the other material in the show. That way, you'll never miss a single episode.
Activists, shout out.
Tomorrow, March 1st, is Nuclear Victims Remembrance Day, which is the anniversary of the Castle Bravo test in the Marshall Islands and a national holiday there. You will probably be listening to this too late to participate live on March 1st, but we'll have a series of links up on the website, including an event that took place yesterday, February 7th, hosted by ICAN Australia, ICAN being the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. Also hosting is the Nuclear Truth Project and the Pacific Conference of Churches. Many speakers, many facts, still no solution to the horrific nuclear infliction by the United States on those South Pacific islands. In Illinois, there has been a moratorium on building new nuclear power plants until the federal government has a working permanent repository for spent fuel. But now, Republicans are trying to rescind this moratorium with HB 1079. People from anywhere can sign on to witness slips informing the government of their position on this, which until very recently was far in excess for those opposed to rescinding the moratorium than against it. However, Dave Kraft of Nuclear Energy Information Service based in Chicago informs us that suddenly, from all over the country, slips in favor of rescinding the moratorium have come pouring in. Bet you can't guess who's probably behind that one. So, we need your help. We will have a link up on the website to where you can fill out your own witness slip stating that you are against the rescinding of the moratorium on building new nukes in Illinois. And what is referred to as the Daisy ad, which was used by President Lyndon Johnson in his election campaign of 1964. It shows a small girl counting as she pulls the petals off a daisy, and that overlaps with the countdown to a launch of a nuclear weapon. It's very powerful, and no matter what you think of the politics of Johnson, it's a very strong set of visual images. We will post to that on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, all of it under this episode, number 610. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, February 28, 2023. Material for this week's show has been researched and compiled from nuclear-news.net, deunrenard.wordpress.com, beyondnuclear.org, nears.org, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICANW.org, thebulletin.org, midhudsonnews.com, peakskillherald.com, IEER.org, USA Today, WJHL.com, NBCNews.com, JapanWonderTravel.com, ChinaDaily.com, Asahi.com, GlobalTimes.cn, and the captured and compromised by the industry they're supposed to be regulating, Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Our thanks to Linda Pence Gunter for the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story, and Roger Johnson and Kathy Iwane for the San Onofre Surf Update. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, you won't miss a single episode, and it's easy to do. Go to nuclearhotseat.com, scroll down for the yellow box, put in your first name or somebody's first name and an email address, gotta be a good one, and every week you will get one email with the link and a short description of the show's content. You can also get the show wherever fine podcasts are posted. Now, if you've got a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, we really need your help. Anything you do will be terrific, and we will really appreciate your support. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2023, Libby Halevi and Hardestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program and the website. This is Libby Halevi, producer and host of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you that you can't buy your way out of a nuclear disaster, no matter how much money you've got. There you go. You have just had your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, do not go back to sleep, because we are all still in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.